You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Dario Saric is back on the practice court, and that means better days are ahead for us here on Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I am your host, Brendan Kleen. You can follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at Locked On PHX Suns. You can follow me on Twitter and the Locker Room app at Brendan Kleen 14. Hope you enjoyed the show on the Locker Room app last night. That was a fun way to interact with you guys, give you some live recap feedback right away at the final buzzer. Let me know how you feel about that one, and we can do more, hopefully once a week. But today's show is more season preview content, more national perspective for you guys. And today's guest is Rohan Nadkarni of Sports Illustrated, a writer who I have read for about as long as I can remember. He always does fantastic work on the NBA over at Sports Illustrated. This week had two stories drop for their daily cover series on Anthony Davis and Jimmy Butler. So we get into those stories and what they tell us about superstar player movement these days in the NBA. We talk about Heat culture. Rohan is a Heat aficionado and, of course, just wrote that Jimmy story that allowed him to re-examine things down in South Beach. And we close the show with Rohan's thoughts on the team overall, and his he actually wrote about Oklahoma City last year and Chris Paul's time there. So he was a great person to pick the brain of as we get ready for Suns basketball. We are just a couple days away. This is Friday. By the time I talk to you next, we'll only be 2 days away from Suns Mavs at the newly renovated Suns Arena to tip off the 2020-21 season. If you like the show, please consider subscribing, following wherever you get your podcasts. And if you are a returning listener, welcome back. Give that wonderful five-star rating and review if you do not mind. Helps more Suns fans find us ahead of what should be an awesome 2020-21 NBA season. Without further ado, let's get to Rohan. Could not be more excited to be joined by the guest on today's show, which is Rohan Nadkarni of Sports Illustrated. Wrote two incredible profile stories on their daily cover this week. The two stars of this year's finals, I guess, is how it ended up. Jimmy Butler and Anthony Davis. And Rohan, why I wanted to bring you on at least when it comes to these stories is that your kind of insight into those two combined with Giannis's decision this week to sign his extension with Milwaukee just kind of has me thinking about star player movement in the NBA again. So, you know, I guess what stuck out to me about your stories is that they were both kind of about two guys finding comfort in their careers after a long time of not having it or striving to try to find it. And it kind of seems like Milwaukee or Giannis kind of found that in Milwaukee. So you could look at that and just kind of almost say free agency is working like it was intended to almost at face value here. But I'm curious if you see any connections between Davis, Butler, and Giannis in terms of where we're at with player movement in the NBA right now.
I think the biggest connection between all three of them is I think that they were happiest when they finally got to make a choice, right? Anthony Davis, I think, chose to get out of New Orleans the way he went about that. Obviously, people have different opinions about it, but he told New Orleans, I'm not going to sign my Supermax extension. He made that choice. He valued the option of playing for a team like the Lakers more than the Pelicans. And, you know, it was hard to argue with the results. As far as Jimmy Butler goes, Minnesota, Philadelphia, Chicago, he never, you know, chose to sign with those teams in a sense. He was drafted by Chicago. They decided that they didn't really think he could be the leader, that he ended up being in Miami, traded him to Minnesota, traded him, then Minnesota traded him to Philadelphia. So the connection I really see there is I think guys are at their happiest when they're finally given that, you know, freedom to make a choice. And that's kind of the through line I see between those three guys.
What stood out to you most learning about Butler? I know, you know, you've written about the Heat a lot, and, you know, I think you had an anecdote in the story where you were talking to Jimmy about writing about Jimmy. And so I'm sure he's a guy you've spent a lot of time thinking about as well, but what do you think worked for him so well in Miami, because he's not a guy we would have thought about as the best player on a finals team until it was right in front of us kind of happening.
Yeah, it really was a right time, right place situation. I think what stood out to me was his relationship with Eric Spoelstra. There's a legitimate bond there. I think it goes beyond player coach. I think they're two people who would consider each other friends, and they really seem to be on the same page about what they expect and what they want from the people around them. You know, Spoelstra, I think during games, likes to project this image of calmness, right? If you watch his in-game interviews during the finals, during the Eastern Conference finals, he's not frantic. He's not sweating. He's not giving these kind of energetic answers. He's very, you know, trying to project this level of calm, when in reality, he is as competitive, I think, as any player on the roster. And I think that him and Jimmy recognize that in each other. They're both very competitive. I believe Eric Spoelstra called Jimmy Butler a top percentile competitor. And I think when starting with that relationship, I don't even think that Jimmy had that with Tibbs necessarily. Someone who is as equally competitive as he is, but also, you know, Eric Spoelstra making sure that Jimmy's doing okay off the court, for example, in the bubble, you know, telling him, hey, make sure you write something down in a journal every day, go for a walk, take care of yourself mentally. I think with that aspect kind of taken care of, being so comfortable on the court, being in a good place in his personal life, I think that is really what allowed him to succeed as well as he did professionally. I think he just felt more welcomed and more appreciated in Miami probably than any of his other stops.
It seems like with the Davis story, what I was thinking about reading it is how kind of silly it can seem in hindsight to not even second guess, because there's not the first guess, but to like wonder or worry that such great players won't somehow fit on great teams. Like, I think we just do it because we don't know what else to do with some of these players, but watching it and then reading about his kind of process of getting to the point he was at in the finals in your story kind of makes it silly that we ever kind of had doubts about Davis in the first place. And I think it really does just show how much context can change things for guys. But I'm curious what you think about, it's kind of a similar question to the Butler thing, but what about the situation in Los Angeles brought the best out of Davis, where he was just, I mean, frankly, a monster throughout the playoffs?
I think that's a great point. You know, I always thought it was funny when people said, did the Lakers give up too much? And I'm like, what could you possibly give up that was on the Lakers roster outside of LeBron that was quote unquote too much for Anthony Davis, right? That never made sense to me. And I think what really stood out to me was, you know, I live in Los Angeles and covering the Lakers last year and getting to write this story. What stood out to me for over a year now is just how him and LeBron amplify each other in a way that makes, you know, greater than the sum of their parts. And their parts are already incredible, right? I mean, they already have two of the best, you know, two of the top seven players in the NBA. And now together, that force is even greater. That's what really stood out to me. I think that, you know, AD, I don't know that he is right now or last season could have been the number one guy on a championship team. I think he can still grow into that. But him and LeBron just push each other in a way that I think great players, like you mentioned, are almost always capable of doing that. Those two just happen to do it even better than most pairings.
It's been really exciting to see Davis even take his game to another level. I hope we see him get to the point where he is kind of like, if their roles flip in a couple of years, especially now that Davis is locked in long term, that would just be really fascinating to watch. But to close this segment out, I guess what I'm thinking about in terms of, this is obviously a Sun show and Devin Booker is the superstar in question when it comes to the Phoenix Suns. I wrote last year something about how it felt like the pressure was kind of on teams right away with players. I was thinking about this because of Trae Young and sort of him not liking the coach and, you know, Zion and Luka, the way that I actually think it was written about in Sports Illustrated, the way that Zion, the Pelicans were just kind of giving their franchise over to kind of building around him right away from the jump. And we've seen how they've done that. It seems like that's coming earlier and earlier. And obviously it's a conversation that won't go away in the NBA. So I'm curious, if you're an NBA team trying to keep its superstar player happy, you know, maybe it's from these profiles of Butler and Davis or just kind of what you've observed. What are the things you're most focused on right now?
it's a very fine balance between building a team around your star's personality, making sure you have the right pieces around them, versus not going in a full Rockets direction where you capitulate to a point where you are maybe sacrificing proper roster construction at times just to keep someone happy. And it's different, you know, guys have different personalities, different goals, different motivations, that it's not easy to do that organizationally. I mean, you look at a Steph Curry or Giannis, their makeup is just a little bit different. And that obviously that helps. Tim Duncan, him being the kind of person he was, it helps the Spurs have the longstanding success that they did. People assumed that about Kawhi, and then you saw that he wanted to leave. So, you know, I don't know that there's a one perfect formula realistically for any team, because guys are so different and they might want different things in their career or want to live different places, etc. But I think a big part of it is just you know, working with that player from early in their career. And so I do credit the Pelicans for doing that. Like, hey, you know, let's get Zion involved. Let's try to build this in a way that he's comfortable with. But I do think ultimately it comes down to winning, right? If Oklahoma City had won a title or two, does Durant stay? Maybe. I mean, maybe he wants to go no matter what, but maybe he doesn't go to Golden State because he doesn't feel as much pressure to win a championship. And, you know, he just goes, you know, wherever he wants. So I think winning ultimately is going to be that biggest thing, which is why bringing it back to the Suns, I love that they're swinging for it a little bit. And, you know, they've tried it in the past. Obviously, they brought in Rubio. They brought in Trevor Ariza at one point to put veterans around Devin Booker to build a more competent team. But I think it's good when you have a young piece like him in place. You want to surround them with capable guys, because I think winning ultimately is what's going to convince someone to stay.
Totally, totally fair and well said. I think it does depend. And I think that's that level of stability, the baseline benchmark you have to have to, I think, even start that process. Unfortunately, the Suns might only just be getting there. So we might have to see, really now is probably the time when that level of scrutiny over how and you know how they choose to build and where that takes them might be worth observing at, you know, more intensely. So we'll have to see if the Chris Paul thing is the right way to do that, if it brings about the level of success that makes Booker happy. And we'll get into that to close the show. But in the next segment, I wanted to talk to Rohan about Heat culture. And after writing about Butler and re-examining Heat culture, if James Jones can build that here in Phoenix, because it does seem like he's targeting a lot of the same things that Miami does. Before that, I wanted to take a quick break, tell you guys about the sponsor of today's show, which is Built Go. Break through your wall with Built Go, a perfect 1.5 ounce package of workout gel that is the best on the market. I certainly hit a wall this week. I'm actually recovering from COVID. I did not say that on the show this week. I was trying to drive past it, but we talk about a wall when we're talking about Built Go, and that sure as hell was a wall that I hit. So Built Go has been perfect for me as I'm getting back to recovering and as I've been working out and trying to keep busy throughout this entire crazy year. Built Go combines energy gel with collagen protein, as well as the good stuff to ignite your work, like beta-alanine, B3, honey, and a little kick of caffeine. The stuff literally makes you look better as well. That collagen can promote joint, soft tissue, hair, and skin health. So it's all around natural, all around healthy, and gets you where you need to go throughout your day. Visit BuiltGo.com right now and use the promo code LOCKED at checkout to get 20% off your order. Again, use the promo code LOCKED for 20% off at BuiltGo.com.
You really just dropped a bomb there, huh?
I did drop a bomb.
Are you all right?
I'm all right. Yeah, I appreciate you asking. No, I'm... It wasn't too severe, to be completely honest. I had a really bad fever the first day that I kind of let sit there because I wanted to go to the doctor and let them actually like check me out fully. But once the fever broke and whatever, it's just been like fatigue and all that. Yeah, it's nasty though, man. I'm not going
to
lie.
Well, I think I, not to get into a full on COVID talk here, I think I had it in February, towards the end of February, before it really, you know, hit the fan here, but I guess I'll never know.
Yeah, I guess you could take one of those antibody tests or
whatever. Yeah. But, I guess, yeah. I could know, but whatever. Well, I'm glad you're doing okay, most importantly.
Appreciate that. Yeah, it's. I was like, I don't know if I should say it on the show. I know nobody wants to think about it, but...
Right. No, I mean, it's good. It happens. People, for some people, it hasn't affected them in their personal lives yet, but unfortunately, it very much can happen.
I'm definitely in the no idea how I got it group too. Well, I got it from my fiance, but we don't know how she got it at all. So, yeah, well, there's no natural way to transition, but I am curious as you dove back into heat culture, which I think is almost like I see it in clip art whenever I say it, because it's such a kind of a meme almost at this point. But I think it's serious too. And I think it had a lot to do with why they were able to succeed in the bubble the way that they did over in Miami. So what sticks out to you when you think about the culture that they've built there and why it works so well?
You know, I think what really sticks out to me is the buy-in that every member of the organization has on every level, right? I mean, you have buy-in in the PR department, you have buy-in in the front office, you have buy-in in the coaching staff. I mean, the Heat are the kind of organization that has people who've been there for 25, 30 years, people who've been there basically since Pat Riley took over. And that, I think, is really what makes the difference. I mean, I've had conversations with Eric Spoelstra where, I mean, he's talking passionately about, he's like, I just want to be a steward of what Mickey and Pat have built. I mean, I don't think Eric Spoelstra and Pat Riley are wired the same necessarily. You know, Riley is the kind of guy who says there's winning and there's misery. I think Eric Spoelstra has come to appreciate a different aspect of coaching. He loves building guys up. He loves developing guys. He loves just getting the most out of each team. He's friendly with players in a way that I don't think Riley ever was. But, you know, they still just have that buy-in in terms of how things should be done, about the level of professionalism they expect. And I think that's what really stands out to me about the Heat is, you know, whether or not like opposing fans like snicker at it or think it's silly or and I think they would even agree to an extent, like, yeah, it sounds cliche, but the fact that everyone has bought in on every level is what keeps that alive. And I will say, you know, talking to players, current, former, they all will tell you it's different. It's just different being there. Agents want their undrafted players like a Duncan Robinson to sign there because of what the program can do for them. So whatever term you want to use for it, because, you know, I agree with you that for some people the culture is just like you want to groan and you roll your eyes and like, not this again, like not another Heat fan tweet about culture. But it's the people who are a part of it can point to something that is kind of across the board. It exists there.
Exactly. And I think like, that's why I think you have to kind of take it with a grain of salt. And to clarify, like Suns fans will know this, but James Jones, it's not like he comes out every time he speaks publicly and talks about how he's, you know, recreating Heat culture. It's just, we know he spent so much time there. He does speak kind of fondly of what things he was able to glean from that organization. And I would imagine that a guy who had his sights set on being in a front office someday was probably sitting there trying to soak as much up as possible. So I think it's just something I've noticed in terms of especially the types of players that they've tried to acquire up in, you know, even at the bottom of the roster. I think like this is a team, we know their draft history of targeting guys who are cultural fits. You know, they've talked a lot about how Jalen Smith, their 10th pick this year, was they liked the fact that he grew up in a military family. Like that actually did play a factor in their decision to draft him. And, you know, guys like Etuan Moore who, you know, are kind of just known for being hard workers, being adaptive, being good leaders. So I do think the Suns are trying to build whatever their version of the culture is. But I wanted to dial in on the player development part because we know that's going to be important for the Suns. This is still a young team. What do you think is the magic sauce for them that allows a Duncan Robinson to flourish or allows even like a Bam Adebayo to flourish after being a late lottery pick?
It really is the finding guys who want what the Heat is giving them, right? You know, Spoelstra likes to say it's not for everyone. We're going to push you. We're going to like make you be uncomfortable a little bit. But they want guys who welcome that. You know, I remember Eric Spoelstra telling me a story. He used to you know, come in on his off days when guys like Wayne Ellington weren't allowed to be in the gym, and he'd see Wayne in the gym getting his shots up when, you know, Wayne was supposed to be off, and he'd watch through the window and he wouldn't stop him. Like, you know, they love that kind of stuff. I asked Duncan Robinson once, like, how does someone do what you do? Like, how does that happen? And he said, there's just no wasted time. Even when I was a 15th guy on the bench, there was not a wasted day for me, not a wasted moment. You know, he had been building up to what he was last season throughout his rookie year because of everything that happens kind of behind the scenes, out of the spotlight. And I think Bam is the same way. You know, Zach Lowe wrote a great profile about him, just kind of the motivation he has, the hunger he has to be what he's become. And you see it on the court. I mean, his statistics don't come from anything other than him being Bam Adebayo, making what he considers to be the winning play, the right play. So I think what the Heat really have done is, you know, obviously they want the big names. They want the stars. They're going to trade for the Jimmy Butlers of the world. Even if Jimmy didn't necessarily have the, you know, commitment to work that was attached with him. I think I love Dwayne Wade. I don't think Dwayne Wade is as, who obviously worked very hard. I don't think that he's as maniacal about it as Butler necessarily. So, you know, the Heat do a great job, I think, of just identifying guys who fit, you know, whether it was, you know, Rodney Magruder in the past, Udonis Haslam. There's a reason Udonis has stuck around for so long. So it's a combination of, you know, obviously they're going to push people and they expect a lot out of guys. But the reason it works is I think they've, I don't know what the trick is for them necessarily. That's something I'm still trying to find out. But I think they've done a good job of figuring out how to identify the kind of player who wants what they're giving them. And I think that is, you know, if we all knew what that was, right, we'd be running front offices, running sure. teams, being owners maybe. But they've done a good job of figuring out something in people that is going to respond to what they do.
How much do you think I think a lot of what gets talked about, maybe because it is the most tangible part of it, it's the one thing, like you're saying, we don't know. We probably never will know. Otherwise, why would it be working so well if everybody could just kind of have access to it? It seems like the one thing that people do feel like they can kind of grab hold of is the physical stuff, the conditioning, the fat percentage, the you know, the hard workouts, things like that. How much of a part in this do you think that stuff plays?
I think it plays a huge role, and especially that buy-in that I talked about, right? Because they don't waver on the commitment to it. I mean, they made LeBron James do it. They made Shaquille O'Neal do it. They made Chris Paul. I mean, you know, go down the list. And I think the big thing is not only do they do that, and I do think it makes a big difference. I mean, I've talked to Dwayne Wade before, just the difference in conditioning or however they do it between, let's say, Cleveland and Miami or Chicago and Miami. It's just, it is different. It is different. I'm not even going to say one is better, but just that Miami has a way that they want to do things and it's worked for them. So that's what they're committed to. And I think the reason why it works so well is not only that they push guys the way they do, or that they make them do a conditioning test, is that they're consistent with it. And I think, you know, when you have consistency, when you have routine, when you treat players the same, that also makes a huge difference.
I ask because I think, you know, the Suns built a new practice facility long overdue, but it is very, you know, they partnered with Verizon on it and they're at least publicly trying to direct the attention towards some of the technology and the biomechanical observations they're going to be able to make on these guys and things like that. So it wouldn't surprise me if over time we see more of a focus on that from James Jones. So, you know, whether it works or not, whether they can get it to the level where it's kind of the well-oiled machine that Miami seems to be, remains to be seen. But I thought it was interesting that was kind of the way that they chose to focus on this practice facility. You don't always hear about technology and when a practice facility is unveiled. So I guess a lot of this is wait and see, but that's plenty to chew on. I wanted to close the show talking big picture thoughts with Rohan. We'll be back doing that just after this. All righty. Continuing our season preview with Rohan Nadkarni of Sports Illustrated. Make sure you also check out Locked On Bets, our latest show on the Locked On Network, getting you ready every morning to stuff your pockets with cash. Handicapper and host do a great job there. Just 10, 15 minute show every morning to get you ready for the best deals of the day. But let's talk big picture Suns here for this season to close things out. I read some of your, you were one of the yeomen doing the great work of kind of grading a lot of these deals as they came down, Rohan, which I always have a lot of respect for. But it seemed like you were pretty optimistic on what the Suns did. So tell me kind of how you think this fits together and what your expectations are for them in 21.
I really like it. I mean, first and foremost, I know that so much of the conversation around Chris Paul has gotten, I think, caught up in his contract number and, you know, what that does to your salary cap, et cetera, et cetera. And lost in the side of that, the fact that, like, he can still play. His 2 years with the Rockets, he was great when he was on the floor. He's one of the few players that, you know, when James Harden wasn't playing, the Rockets were still great, and that was because of Chris Paul. He's been a winner everywhere he goes. I still don't think people realize, like, the effort it took to transform a franchise like the Clippers and the run of success that basically his presence started there. And so I think he's the kind of player that brings a, you want to talk about culture. He brings that with him. I saw it. I spent a week, roughly a week in Oklahoma City last year. And from everyone on the roster just raved about what he did for guys like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Darius Bazley, just the, his commitment and buy-in and the way people follow him, it's really remarkable. I think he's a massive, massive acquisition for them. And then you got a guy like Jay Crowder. What I really like about the Jay Crowder signing is we just watched a postseason where he's the kind of player that can stay on the floor no matter what. Those are the guys ultimately you want to acquire. Bob Myers, I think, I don't know where he gave this talk exactly. I think it was a couple years ago now, but you know, the game changes in the postseason, and really what it comes down to is, can you have players who are multi-talented that can't be played off the floor? That's what you need. And I think the Suns did a great job of acquiring those kinds of players this summer. And I really like that. I want to see now what Devin Booker can do with a proper infrastructure around him. I've been lukewarm on Booker, not because I don't think he's talented, but I do think at some point some of the responsibility for the lack of winning goes on to you. Now we can, you know, do, I'm sure, many podcasts about issues that the Suns have had over the years, whether it was the front office. Or
I have done many podcasts on that.
So I just think that, you know, I wouldn't say Chris Paul is underrated, but I think Suns fans are going to see firsthand this year what it's like to have someone of his stature on and off the floor on your roster. He's a one man culture. That's how I would describe Chris Paul. He's that good. And I think they're going to take a big leap up.
I do too. And I know it's not a one-to-one comparison because Booker is considerably more experienced than Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, but because you spent that time there last year, and Shai's kind of the closest we can get, I'm curious what you observed as far as the impact that Paul had on Shai and what you think that might do for whether it's Booker, maybe more likely to be Ayton in terms of a really young player, and what Paul can do for a guy like that.
Man, Paul and Shai, I think they probably must still talk every day. They were legitimately good friends is what I realized. The first time I interviewed Shai Gilgeous-Alexander for the story I was working on about Chris Paul, I mean, the entire time he was just making jokes about Chris Paul. He said he used to be his favorite player, then he got too old. He said he wasn't scared about matching up with Chris Paul when they played against each other because Paul was too short to guard him. Like, they were legitimately friends, you know, the kind of guys who would find each other right after a game ended and kind of leave the arena together. That was what I noticed. And I think that, you know, Chris, what I appreciated about his friendship with Shai, it wasn't just a mentorship because there was that aspect of it, right? It was watching film together on the road and, you know, let's not go out to dinner tonight. Let's stay in the hotel and watch film and figure out what we're going to do about our opponent. They're both basketball obsessives in that way. You know, their stories about hanging out together weren't, we went to Cabo in the summer. It was, oh, you know, Chris came to my room so we could talk about this next opponent. At the same time, you know, Chris told me, he was like, this isn't no, like, you know, Shay, you have to take the mantle because I can't do this anymore. It's let's do this together. And that's what I want to see happen with the Suns is, I don't think it's just going to be Chris in a mentorship role. I think he's going to want to, you know, win with these guys. It's not just a passing of the baton. It's let's be a team. Let's be a unit. Let's figure out how to do this. And I think what remains to be seen, but what I hope happens is, I hope that guys like Ayton and Booker respond to that. I hope that they are welcoming of that because, you know, you can make a case that if you're a young player, maybe that's not what you want. And I wouldn't blame them. If you're DeAndre Ayton, a number one pick, you have pedigree. You want to be the leader of the team. I could see why maybe an older guy like Chris Paul coming in and you aren't necessarily on the same page with him. Like that kind of stuff does happen. And I don't think anyone's at fault for that. But I do, what I'm hoping to see is just those guys really buy in and play as a unit. Cause that was what was special about that OKC team was, even though there was this feeling, I think around most of them last year, that this is temporary. We know that we're not a long-term unit. Like they really bought in to do that together. And that's what I'd like to see happen in Phoenix.
Just as an example, Monty was giving he had practice media availability today, and he was asked about just, you know, he's kind of been asked every day about how the integration of Paul has been going. And he gave, he told us a story about how this morning their coaches meeting got out an hour before practice was supposed to start. And they were going to just kind of, you know, split up. And as guys came in, start getting work in with them. And Paul and Ayton were already watching film up in one of the office rooms. And so, you know, that's the indication, or that's an example of what Paul's going to want to do. But to your point, I guess, you know, nobody would be blamed for not absorbing that readily necessarily. It, you know, all the fuzzies of training camp indicate that everybody's happy to learn from Paul, but we'll have to watch it, of course, over the season. And what I wanted to close with is, from my perspective, and you just hit on it, which was perfect, is I think one difference that maybe isn't getting enough attention here between what happened last year with Paul in Oklahoma City and the success there versus even now and the potential for it to be similar or even more impactful is Paul, I don't think either side is looking at this being a one-year situation if all goes well. So there is a possibility of making this into, like you said, building and actually going somewhere rather than kind of imparting knowledge for a year as like a professor who's coming over for abroad and teaching one of your classes. This is like a guy who you can really think of as a partner in this. So I wonder how that changes things, and who knows what happens with Paul after the 2 years left on his contract. But I do think that could present some more, at least be the reason that guys are more willing to kind of see him that way if there is one. But you can read his work at Sports Illustrated. It is always great. You can follow him on Twitter at Rohan Nadkarni. Thanks for coming on. It's the first time we've talked, but I think it was fun.
Oh, no, my pleasure. I'm looking forward to watching the Suns this season. Hopefully they're playing well, and we can do this again sometime. Thank you so much for having me on.
No problem. We will be back on Monday, guys, recapping the final preseason game of the Suns slate and getting you ready for opening night, which is somehow, Wednesday? Wow. Wednesday is the first regular season game of the Suns season. So get excited, and we'll see you then.